We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Grinders, welcome to Roto Grinders. Today I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender Ed, Blender HD. You're gonna follow me on Twitter, and it's Friday, March 22nd. We'll be taking a look at tomorrow's UFC fight night slate, 13 fights, MMA slate, 7 o'clock tomorrow night, a little bit later start time than usual. So hit that thumbs up button on your way in the door, hit the subscribe button if you're new here, hit the notification bell to know when we go live. Join with me as usual on Fridays to talk about UFC. Is Squirrel Patrols, the master of the takedowns. And I suspect your takedowns article this week is going to lead off with everyone's in play.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, we have a tendency to see the card the same way. Sometimes it's a little bit of a struggle to find, you know, like four underdogs I want to write up on. Sometimes I'm kind of damning the last fighter in with some faint praise. This one, yeah, I looked back at the lines over the past year of UFC cards, and this is the first card in about a year where we don't have anyone that's a like 70% favorite or like minus 300. We don't even have a minus 250 on this card. So everybody's in play. Let it up. It should be an interesting card.
The thing that's noticeable, though, is that while everyone is in play, like the most expensive fighter, 9,400, Stephen Wynn is only a minus 185 favorite with a plus 240 inside the distance line. I think that finishes maybe at a premium, this slate. And I think it's going to be more important to find those finishes than necessarily lock in winners, only because the fights are so close that if you just focus on who do I think is going to win, you have 7 million combinations. But I think it's so much easier to go, what fights are more likely to end in the first round? than that. And I think that when our simulation output comes out, and if you're a RotoGrinders premium member, you'll be able to get this later today. Obviously, Mike and Liam will have the Ground and Pound podcast out today as well. Squirrel's takedowns article, Liam's breakdowns, everything. If you're a premium member, and we're running a special for Combo Premium, it's $250 off. That's a lot of money off for a 6-month Combo Premium. So it's almost like you get like 2 months free for doing that. So if you want to sign up, you can do that right now. Or if you want to just try it out for 3 days, it's $19.99. Okay, so you'll get your MMA stuff. You'll get your NBA stuff. You'll get your college basketball's going on. You get all that. So if you just want to try it out for 3 days, $19.99. But John, I'm thinking when the sim output comes out, the fighters that are more likely, I think the numbers are going to be much more condensed. Like it's going to be like there's not going to be fighters that are like 45% chance to be optimal and fighters to be like 7% chance to be optimal. But I do think it's going to lean heavily on very binary outcome fighters. So the two fights that I see, two types of fights, like something like the Edmund Shahbazyan AJ Dobson fight. Edmund Shahbazyan is the type of fighter. He's pretty much a power puncher, stand-up striker. Typically gasses out, but when he wins in the first round. He's 9,100. So obviously, he's going to kind of have to, for that price, he needs to win in the first round. But you also have like Carl Williams versus Justin Taffa. Like Carl Williams most likely isn't going to finish anyone, but he could have 10 takedowns. But Justin Taffa's win condition is essentially a first round knockout. And at 6,900, his chances of getting 100 points is probably like 30%. Right? And at 6,900, his optimal chances getting 100 points is probably 30%. So I have to assume that when these numbers come out, that it's going to back up my claim that you're looking for who can score 100 plus points first, and then filling out kind of like the rest of your lineup from there.
Yeah. So yeah, the odds of like inside the distance odds for these fighters are not that good. And so you said the key might be finding finishes. It could be if there are finishes to be found. Like this could be one where there aren't a lot of finishes on the card, and there's not particularly high paced fighters either. So this might be one of the most variant cards we've seen. I've actually kind of spoken out against leaving a bunch of salary on the table recently because I think a lot of people are actually like plugging that in and locking that in as something they do as part of their process. Like, I don't want to use all my salary because I don't want to be duped. This is one you can leave some salary on the table because the win odds you're getting for the price are actually higher than they usually are because there just aren't those massive underdogs on the card. Like, we don't have the massive favorites. The flip side is we don't have the massive underdogs. It's funny you named Justin Taffa because he's one of the most interesting fighters on the card. And it's just like, it's an interesting statistical situation because, yeah, he's got about a 30% chance to win his fight, I think. Let me make sure. 37% chance.
He's plus 155, so 39%.
Okay, yeah, I'd knock a little bit off for the big or whatever. I think it comes out to about 37%. It's about 22% like aggregating odds from a bunch of different sports books to win in the first round. He is almost the definition of first rounder bust, but he's only 6,900. And you don't usually see fighters that have a 20% plus chance of winning in the first round below 7,000. Our Sims are going to love him. I can tell because I don't know if he's going to see that high of ownership. I think we've got him projected for about 18% ownership. I think it'll probably end up being higher because like everybody's Sims are going to say, if he wins, it gets that first round win at 6,900. He's almost certainly in the winning lineup. Our Sims are going to love him. They're going to show him as one of the best like leverage fighters you can get. And also I do think a lot of people are going to go to Carl Williams. Like he is one of the strongest favorites, but again, you're not getting great win odds for that, you know, for that salary on this card at 9,300. He does get a lot of takedowns, but it's, well, he attempts a bunch of takedowns. He doesn't always get a bunch of takedowns. And I don't know that Taffa is going to be that easy to take down. He hasn't been taken down a lot, but it's also the heavyweight, you know, division. So there's not a lot of guys that are trying takedowns. And if Williams does get a takedown, that might be the end of the fight. Like, I don't know if Taffa is getting back up. So that'll be an interesting fight. I mean, that's clearly one of the key fights on the slate. And I'm going to be over our projected ownership on Taffa. I think you have to be, like, you have to own fighters at least at their like round one win probability, especially on a card where there's not a lot of like high round one win probabilities. So I'll be over the field on Taffa, and then Carl Williams. I mean, there's no reason, particular reason to shy away from him. He's getting takedowns and he's got strong win odds. But if he ends up being super highly owned, it's probably not worth eating that ownership at the 9,300 level, just because like his win odds aren't as good as you sometimes see for like the 9,300 and above fighters.
Well, how about the Shabazian Dobson fight? Because Shabazian has the highest round one odds, plus 265. The thing about Shabazian, I mean, I put him in the same boat as Taffa, that he typically, if he wins, he wins in the first round. And if he doesn't win in the first round, he typically gasses and loses. Dobson has never been finished in his career. I don't believe in his career. I'm not a big fan of AJ Dobson's skill set. He's just like kind of a tough guy. I'm not saying that Dobson is a great choice, but Shabazian is different than Taffa in that, like, Shabazian, like, at 9,100, he has to. Like, if Taffa, for some reason, gets, like, a early round two KO or ends up with a round three KO, like, he's 6,900. Like, if he just wins, that's pretty good. You're in contention for the optimal just by winning at that price. Edmund Shabazian, if he scores 78 in some decision, like, good luck to you. You ain't getting the optimal at 9,100.
Yeah, I agree. And this card is full of these guys. There are like former Dana White Contender Series guys that are tough guys, not particularly skilled. They like to get in your face and throw punches. So I'm actually kind of surprised some of the inside of the distance lines aren't higher, just because of like, you know, you could see some kind of lower level chaos where guys are just in each other's faces and somebody gets, you know, punched and knocked down. Almost all these guys are the same. It's really weird. And so many of these guys have the same kind of history of like, oh, they were, you know, on the Dana White Contender Series, they lost, they came back, they won. Now they're in the UFC, you know, they're making debut or they're making their second fight or third fight. Don't have a bunch of quality wins on the record. And they all have about the same odds. Other than like the main event and the Justin Taffa fight, I look at almost all of these fights as exactly the same. There's an argument you should just own everybody at about 30% and call it a day. If you're multi-entry, just run everybody with like a 30%, 30% ownership cap, 30% ownership floor. All these guys are the same.
Well, talking about the main event, we got a 5-round fight between Rose Namajunas and Amanda Ribas. I don't know about you, but based on the past couple of fights of hers, $9,200 Rose Namajunas doesn't sound all that appealing. She technically has the highest ITD line of the card at -105, but it's only because she has 5 rounds to finish. It doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be quick. This is another fight that I don't feel like the line should be this wide. Like, it isn't. It's -210 and +180. So it isn't that wide. It's just that all the other fights are slightly closer. So Rose is 9,200 and Amanda Ribas is 7,000. I don't know about you, but if this goes to a 5-round decision, I mean, how does Namajunas make the optimal and how does Ribas not make the optimal with the win? Or this ends up being the Namajunas Carlos Esparza fight where it doesn't matter who wins, no one scores well. What do you, I mean, are you like me? Are you more inclined to be under this main event because, I mean, we've Nami Yunus projected as 39% owned, and I don't think it's going to be that high because I think so many people be thinking the same way that I am, that do I really want to pay $9,200 for someone that doesn't do much?
Yeah. I'm probably going to be over the field on the main event. We see it a similar way. Nami Yunus is coming off. I guess she had a loss last year. And then before that is one of the most infamous fights in UFC history because the lack of activity. Her and Carla Esparza just looked at each other for five rounds. I remember that card. And it was a pay-per-view. I think I didn't pay for the pay-per-view. And I really thought like my ESPN app was stalling out. Nothing like time kept going on, but like there was no stats being accumulated. And I think I really needed either of them to put up a good score or something. And they just sat there and looked at each other. So I think people are really down on Rose Nami Yunus. But she has five rounds to work with. And she, before the Carla Esparza fight, like if you look at her career, it's actually not that bad. And there's not like, you wouldn't think of her as being a particularly low scoring fighter or particularly like low volume. So I'm willing to take the risk because I think her ownership, I think her ownership might come in a little bit lower just because of her recent fights. I'm willing to take a risk with five rounds. And this is a main event that could go the full five rounds. I think it's about even money to go into the fourth round or to go over four and a half rounds or something like that. And just under even money to go the distance. So that really helps Amanda Ribas because at 7,000, I mean, if she wins a five round win, and she's not particularly low volume either, not particularly high volume, that really helps her out. Like at 7,000, that's probably putting her on the winning line. So I think she's a fighter. I want to roster her at about her win probability. Rose Nami Yunus, I'll take a chance that she comes out a little bit higher volume and puts up a good score. And I think on this card, having the two extra rounds to work with in a fight that is, has a good chance to go the distance makes a big difference because we may not see a bunch of finishes on this card. So, those two extra rounds could help.
I think if we just are focusing on fights, a fight that I would put in the ballpark of like probably need to target this Ricardo Ramos versus Julian Arosa. I can't tell you who's winning. Obviously Ramos is favored, but I mean, he's minus 170 favored. These two guys are not like durable people.
Yeah.
I don't know who's going to win. Obviously Arosa at 7,300 is way more valuable in a win than Ramos at 8,900. But Ramos plus 120 inside the distance, Arosa plus 225 inside the distance. Just from their history is that typically they don't make the scorecards. And it's not because they're big power punches. It's like, no, these guys just can't take punches. And I'm looking for fights that are going to end in a finish on a card that finishes maybe at a premium, seems like this one fits the bill.
Yeah, I think it's actually a good fight to target. These are actually two of the guys that have like a history of being a little bit higher scoring in the UFC. And a lot of these fighters don't have a long UFC history. Ricardo Ramos and Julian Arosa, they have some fights under their belt and some 100 DK point wins in their UFC career. I agree. Both of them have been finished early. I kind of thought the Julian Arosa fight is actually one that I was watching last year. I remember, I think it was last summer. And I did feel like it was stopped a little bit early. Like Julian Arosa, I think got punched in the face and maybe even knocked down, but he seemed fine. And the ref, just jumped in and stopped it. But yeah, I agree. I mean, they could have a early finish here, but both of them actually put up some decent scores without a early finish too, like on the offensive end. I think it's a good fight to target. You could see an early finish and a high score there. You could see it go to decision and be a little bit of a higher score. And we've seen these guys at least have that history of being able to put up big scores in the UFC. I think it's a good fight to target on either side, really.
I want to get your thoughts on a fight that I think maybe very overowned. And that's Billy Carrantillo versus Yusef Zalal. Carrantillo's 8,600, Zalal's 7,600. Carrantillo's only minus 121 favorite now. I mean, if we repriced the win odds based on even on this card where like no one's that big of a favorite, this would be the $8,200, $8,000 fight now. People are used to playing Billy Q in these high-paced matchups because he tends to score well, DraftKings scoring, you know, with his volume slash wrestling slash everything. But, I mean, he's plus 325 inside the distance. And Yusef Zalal, he's coming off, like I think, over a year layoff. But he's typically the death of fights. Like, he's the, like, wins decisions. He's not bad, but he's not good anywhere. I mean, he's typically tough and typically he could take some people down. He could stuff takedowns. He's plus 400 inside the distance. I mean, we have Carrantillo at 39% owned and Zalal at 33% owned. Now, from a money line value, obviously Zalal is $400 too cheap if you wanted to use that thing, but I don't know. I think people look at Billy Q's like game logs and go, yeah, it's going to be another one of these types of fights. And typically Zalal's fights, the winner doesn't score very well. I mean, I don't think they're going to be as owned as like 72% of the field is going to own this fight. But I think maybe 60% of the field owns this fight. And for a ceiling, I'm not convinced that 100 points comes out of the winner here.
Yeah, this is the next fight that we kind of had to talk about. So I think you've got good insight here. Our first run of ownership projections have Billy Carrantillo as the highest owned fighter. And I hope we, you know, and I'm sure we will like rerun ownership projections. We tend to do that a few times before the fights actually start on Saturday night. I don't think he's going to come in as the highest owned fighter. The line is moving very heavily to Yusef Zalal. I would be surprised if it doesn't flip. I think by the time this fight happens, Yusef Zalal will be the favorite, which will be a really interesting, because then it will no longer be like the 8,200, 8,000 fighter. It'll no longer have like line odds like the 8,200, 8,000 fight. It'll be like flipped. So, but Carrantillo does then have a history of high scores. So I'm really interested to see what our final ownership projection comes in at, and I'm interested to see what the actual ownership comes in at. I think Zalal will be very heavily owned because he's going to have a ton of win equity, assuming the line continues to flip. We'll see how these guys look on the scales. But I think people really like Yusef Zalal in this fight. He's fought good fighters in his UFC career and lost. Carrantillo is getting older. But then that makes me kind of interested in Billy Carrantillo. So for the ownership, and I'm saying, like, I think he's going to come in much lower owned than we're projecting. And so I'm maybe interested in being over the field because I think he'll actually be a good leverage play that has the potential to be high scoring. But then there is the fact that, yeah, if Yusef Zalal's fights tend not to be high scoring, maybe it's just a fight you want to avoid entirely. Yeah, this is one of the most interesting fights on the card. So, you know, yeah, you've got to make a decision here what you're going to do. Either go with the win equity with Yusef Zalal, you go with the scoring history Billy Carrantillo, or you just skip the fight entirely. It might end up being a fight you just want to be under the field on if it's going to be heavily owned on either side.
Well, the thing about the win equity is that it's not as big of a deal on this slate compared to other slates. Yeah. Because, I mean, if it was one of those slates where the 9K fighters are minus 600 and minus 500 and all, and it's like, dude, I don't even know what underdogs to pick. It's like, yeah, someone with excessive win equity that's under 8K is worth a lot. We're looking at a card where, like, no one's more than a 2-to-1 favorite. So, like Igor Severino has win equity. I mean, all these people have win. Every Montserrat Rendon could win her fight. I mean, like if you're just looking for, oh, if I put in Zalal and he gets a 68-point win, like, that's much more valuable on a slate where he's the only underdog that wins, right? Like, and then you need him, right? Yeah. Compared to this slate where I could easily see half the underdogs winning.
It's the worst slate probably in a year to have good win equity on DraftKings. Because, yeah, I agree. Like, you probably don't need it. Like, most of the fighters have pretty good win equity. Like, two of the, you know, probably best fighters on the card. Like, Justin Toffa has one of the highest round one finish probabilities on the slate, and he's 6,900. Amanda Ribas is in the main event, and, you know, and decent win odds, and she's only 7,000. She might have five rounds to score with. Yeah, so Yusuf Salal might be the favorite at 7,600, and it might almost be like one of those, like, late noticed replacement type of mispricings on DraftKings. And he's only 7,600. But yeah, I mean, if he doesn't score well, you, like, that 7,600 might not buy you a whole lot. Like, there aren't the fighters with the, you know, 50-50 chance of getting a round one finish on this card, or the minus 500 favorites, minus 600 favorites that, you know, almost, you know, guarantee you a win, or, you know, where the really, really high scoring fighters get a bunch of takedowns on this card that are high priced. So you may just not need the 7,600 savings.
Are there any other fights that you're looking to, you know, be over or under on?
Not really.
But this type of slate, I knew, especially with your style of play, you know, a large portfolio style, and a little bit more similar to me, is that a lot of, like, you look at this and you go, as long as I have combinations that are less likely to be duped,
yeah,
I'm fine with almost any lineup.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you couldn't show me a lineup on this card that I would look at and say, oh, that's terrible, right? Like, I mean, if you even start putting in some of the lowest fight, you know, lowest price fighters, but, well, it's got a better chance to win than that usually does. Yeah, I think my strategy for this slate is simply going to be, and it's not exciting, but if you roster every weighted about the same amount, maybe you get up a little bit for the main event because it's got the possibility of going five rounds, and hope that other people make mistakes in their ownership. Like, that would be my multi-entry strategy, because none of these fighters should be that highly owned. None of them should be that low owned. So own everybody at about the same amount, and hope somebody gets some outsized ownership for some, you know, for whatever reason.
So is your takedowns article going to be much longer than this week because you had so many more underdogs to choose from?
No, you know, I think I'll stick to the four best. But I did. I started writing down last night, you know, the fighters that I wanted to target, and I ended up with, like, seven names on the list, like seven underdogs. And I think, you know, I can write, like, a few things about why you want to roster them at their price. And that is this card in a nutshell. I will probably narrow it down to four that I think are the, you know, absolute best. But yeah, you can pretty much roster anyone. I would say that I am going to pay close attention to the line movement after weigh-ins. And obviously, you know, some of this can change if a fight gets canceled, if two fights get canceled. I feel like the odds of that happening are higher on these lower-level fight night cards. But yeah, I will pay attention to the line movement. We've had some pretty strong line movement in a lot of these fights, which is why we're seeing, you know, some of the underdogs have pretty good win equity. The female fight, I think Daria Zeleznikova and
Zeleznikova.
Yes. And Rendon. So Daria has had a pretty good line movement in her favor. So that's something I'll probably pay attention to. But again, she's making her UFC debut, so it could really go either way. But if she does end up, you know, a little bit higher scoring, she's only 8,800, and she's got pretty good win odds, even on this card for her price.
You can't count out Montserrat Rendon with that she does. She has a high score from doing like she does, like the arm, the head and arm, whatever type of takedown that normally doesn't work in the UFC, like the scarf, the neck around the scarf type of takedowns. And she doesn't do much else other than that, because on the feet she's dead. But seems like the Zeleznikova is just basically just a low-level striker. And, I mean, this fight's more likely to go the distance. But women's MMA, low-level women's MMA, you never know.
Yeah, I think if it sees lower ownership because of, like, the fact that it's a female fight, not likely to end inside the distance, I'll have some interest in being over the field. And like I said, it might just be a factor of, like, everybody should be rostered on this this slate at about the same amount. So if what, you know, the female fighters see lower ownership, particularly at 8,800, if you have, you know, that's really good. She's got about 2/3 chance to win. Yeah, I'd be interested in being over the field.
Well, you could get all of our breakdowns. If you're a premium member, sign up for Roto Grinders Combo Premium. You get the Ground and Pound podcast. You get Liam's breakdown article. You get the expert survey. You get Squirrel Patrol's takedowns. You get the projections. You get the ownership. You get the lineup HQ. You get everything. You get the sim, our sim results, which will come out later today. Me and John use primarily to build our lineups. I will be on Crunch Time tomorrow, 3 o'clock Eastern with Mike. Right? You're I don't know. Are you not at the Fantasy Hockey World Cup Championship, right? No.
Oh no. I couldn't. I think they're doing the basketball, the DK basketball one, and the DK hockey one. They tend to do this the same weekend now. But it's my daughter's spring break, so we're going to Cabo. I'll be watching the fights from Mexico.
Because typically, when you can't make a Saturday on the show, it's because you're at a live final or something.
Live final, yeah.
It's like, did you make? I didn't know you played hockey or anything. It's like, no, you're just going on vacation.
Yeah, just going on vacation. Not the worst week to take vacation as the NBA devolves into late season chaos.
Yeah. And baseball will be back next Thursday.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, this is a great time of year for sports, actually. I mean, we've got the golf tournament going on. We've got March Madness going on. You've got the UFC every weekend. You've got basketball getting a little bit chaotic in the regular season, but that's okay. You know, teams are getting ramped up for the playoffs. And then baseball coming back. It's a great time of year for sports. Great time of year for DFS.
Great time of year for you to hit that like button on your way out the door. Or subscribe to the channel if you're not already. Hit that notification bell to always know when we go live. We got Crunch Time and Grinders Live later today for NBA. So 5 o'clock Eastern, Grinders Live, 6:15, Crunch Time for the NBA slate. We got obviously all the college basketball stuff going on today. Feel free to join the Discord. It's free. I don't know why it's free, but they made it free. RotoGrinders.com/Discord. Join us in there. I'll be back tomorrow with Mike on Crunch Time, and then back on Monday, talking about all things you're thinking about in Daily Fantasy, props and pick 'em on Roto Grinders today.